My name is Tawan McCarty. I was born in Noonan, Georgia, and raised in Carrollton in Atlanta.
How'd you end up out here, by the way?
I was trafficked so much to Birmingham, it became home.
How did this happen to you?
I started running away when I was 12. And between 12 and 15, I ran away many times. And at 15, I met my first pimp. You know, at 15, you have no skill set and you still need to eat and survive. And by this time, I had, quote unquote, perfected running away. And everyone was blaming me for what was going on because people don't actually look at kids' behaviors. They tend to blame them for their behaviors as opposed to going behind the scenes, because healthy kids from healthy homes don't act out. Something's going on. And we tend not to look at it. But anyway, I met my first pimp. I knew he was a pimp. But I didn't have to do what the other girls had to do at first. He had me selling drugs. So, of course, he loved me more. And it didn't take long for that to change. You know, my quota, I made every night by selling drugs up until one particular night that he drops me off and gives me the drugs. And there's not enough drugs for me to make my quota. And I already knew what happened when we didn't make quota. You were punished. And your punishment didn't happen in private. We were all made to watch the girls being punished. And there were five of us. So there were four other girls when I moved in with him. And them. Two of them worked the streets and truck stops, and the other two worked in strip clubs, and he had me selling drugs. So, of course, he loved me more. I mean, I'm 15 and think I'm 10 foot tall and bulletproof, but I'm a naive 15-year-old. Anyway, punishment was anything from a beating, a torture, a rape, or a gang rape. So this particular night, he drops me off and gives me the drugs, and there's not enough drugs to make quota, and so the tables had turned. Did I physically submit to being paid for sex? Yes. I was 15. I wasn't even old enough to consent to sex, much less being paid to be raped. Because even though you're physically submissive, it's not wanted. It's not, and I was 15. So that began it all. So between 15 and 26, I've been sold in every state but Alaska and Hawaii, and Canada and Mexico also. I was trafficked to Birmingham so much that it became home. One of the largest circuits for human trafficking is Atlanta, Birmingham, Nashville, Memphis, and Chattanooga. And even though it was 30 years ago that mine started, it's still in effect, and that is still one of the largest, if not the largest, circuit in the United States.
Is it maybe even easier now, given social media, given the internet?
Oh, my gosh, yes, it's so much easier, because I can get on my... Actually, you know, if I wanted to right now, I could get on my phone and have a girl delivered to me at the front door here before I leave.
Through, like, Backpage, stuff like that?
Through different websites and apps and things, yes.
Okay, yeah. Understood. You were saying that one night you didn't make your quota selling drugs. Where
no,
was
it? No,
that?
I said I didn't have enough drugs to make the quota, so he had turned the tables on me.
Oh, he did that to you on purpose?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so he decided you were not going to be protected from that side of things anymore.
Right, but that was the initial plan anyway. And also you have to understand that all of us suffer from Stockholm Syndrome, which is, you know, he's our caretaker. I mean, the first time I ate crab legs, it was with him. I came from a single-parent home. It was just me and my mom. I'm her only child. I didn't even know what crab legs were because she was a single mom struggling. I mean, we went roller skating and to movies and to dinner. We had breakfast, lunch, and dinner at a table together every day as a family. We had family meetings every day. This was the healthiest thing I'd ever seen. And so you begin, even with the abuse in place, you still began to have feelings for your captor. And those psychological ties last years.
So you're past that Stockholm Syndrome. How did you get past that?
I'm a sweet lady therapist at Wellspring Christian Counseling here in Birmingham. Yeah, I've been seeing her for 5 years, Kelly.
Okay.
So she's absolutely amazing. I love her dearly. She has helped me in amazing ways, and I will probably be in therapy with her until either I'm dead or she is. She is fabulous.
Now, you said before, speaking of therapy, you said before that, you know, healthy kids and healthy families don't act out. I'm gathering the way you acted out. What was going on with you?
Mm-mm.
Can't talk about it?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Fair enough. You mentioned that incident where you were not given enough drugs. Basically, where were you then? Or were you just all up and down the highway in different places all the time? How did it work?
We were based out of Atlanta then, but we hit the highway pretty soon after that. And you have to understand that it's a two and a half hour drive from Atlanta to Birmingham, but it may take us 3 days because you're sold at every single exit.
In situations like that, I mean, is it like truckers or is it just people at stops? Like, how did it work?
It's everybody. I could take you to some offices right here in downtown Birmingham right now that I've been purchased in. That's why sometimes when I'm speaking, I see the whole audience. And the audience is looking at me. And when men purchase sex, they usually purchase from so many they don't remember who it's from. And so for me to get up and say that I'm a survivor of trafficking, and I have seen men literally drop their heads or squirm in their seat. There was one particular event that...
Because you had been with them?
Because they were concerned I had, or they had. They did not know. You know, it, and it was a pretty elite, affluent place in Birmingham.
Can you say where it was?
No.
People tend to think that, oh, you know, that's just those kids over there from the trailer park or from that bad neighborhood. That's not the case, is it?
It is not. I'd rescued a 20-year victim out of Mountain Brook. Been to every soiree, ball, event, gala, and was living in Mountain Brook, and no one ever turned their opened their eyes to even look at her.
How did you help her?
She came to the wellhouse for a number of months. She was absolutely, she's doing great. So there's one thing I do want to say that I want to make sure that goes on the air is that there's a misconception in society today. So prostitution, strip clubs, and pornography is never a choice. I don't care if she's 15 or 50. There's not a little girl in the world says, oh, excuse me, I want to be prostituted when I grow up. I'm not a former prostitute. I was a girl or woman who's being prostituted. So we've got to take the label off. And even if she looks you in the eye and says, I'm choosing to do this, she's in denial. And a good acronym for denial is don't even know I'm lying. She has no clue. Because if you had talked to me when I first started Wellhouse, I would have told you it was my choice. It took therapy for me to understand that it was not. And it literally took a... one momentous session that blew me away, and I actually went back the next week, and my therapist, she was like, I really didn't expect you to make this appointment. The first time I was put on a strip club stage, I was 15, and when my pimp was gone, the bouncer wouldn't let me leave. In every strip club in America, there is a VIP room. In every strip club in America, there's a VIP room, and girls are taken off the stage and sold in that VIP room. Every strip club in America never fails. Pornography, you don't know what's going on behind that camera. You know, by the grace of God, I have not been put on film, but I've seen pornography shoots. I've seen a gun held to a child's head to make the mother perform. You know, the men involved in pornography are not there because they want to be, and it's exciting either. It is horrifying, and they don't want to be there. The other thing I want to make sure that people understand is we don't have a universal drug problem. Drugs are not the problem. Drugs are a symptom of another problem. They're a reaction. We have an abuse, a neglect, a harm, a trauma issue, and people are reacting by using drugs. So I don't want you to say, well, she's just a drug user. Well, yes, or he is. But they may be using drugs, and you have to get the drugs out to be able to coherently talk with people and help them. I get that. But there is no drug problem. We don't have a drug problem. We have a living problem with abuse and neglect and trauma, and people cover it up with drugs.
Okay, so when you started acting out, and I gather this was before you were 15?
Yes.
You were selling drugs. Did you start using them?
Yeah, I started using probably about within 24 hours after that first time being paid for sex. When you're being raped 30 times a day for sex, being paid for sex, you're going to get high on something too.
What were you using?
The drugs that pimp was giving me, I started using cocaine.
Okay. Did that continue to work for you? Did you have to like go to something else?
No, that continued to work for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I used it for years.
Okay. You have tremendous energy right now. I know you're sober. Where's this energy coming from?
God. Yeah, Jesus has changed my life. Knowing the Lord, he is, you know, Lisa Roxanne, when I met her and she showed me what love and grace really is, not the Christianity that I was taught growing up, the hellfire and brimstone, but true love and grace, that I don't care how many times you screw up. I don't care what you've done. I don't care where you've been. I don't care what's happened to you. I love you right where you're at. And that changed my life. You know, I have found that guilt, shame, condemnation, tough love, boundaries, none of that works. It doesn't work. What works is love and grace. And I mean those times where you're going, oh, my God, I'm at my wit's end. I cannot help them anymore. They don't want help. And you love them one more time. And you love them one more time. And then you love them one more time. And then some more times. Because that's what God does for us. You know, he is the hound of heaven, and he tracks us down. And he comes after us.
And kids can really, they're good at knowing when you really do love them.
Oh, absolutely. You know, kids have a BS detector that is amazing. Amazing. And that's why, you know, when, a lot of times when I speak to youth groups and stuff, especially when churches, I let them know I'm going to talk about sex. We're going to have like a valid conversation with some terms that people just don't use because people want to know where prevention comes in when it comes to trafficking. Well, the first thing we do is talk about sex, age appropriately, growing up. And if you've missed that, then you start having those conversations because unless you're a test tube baby, everybody got here because two people had sex. Right. And we don't talk about it. And so it makes it taboo. And especially in the Bible Belt. It makes it so taboo. So we've got to have those conversations.
I was going to ask you, do you think that sort of Puritanism, this idea that sex is always dirty and we should never talk about it, even though it's natural and it's why we're all here. Do you think that contributes to the problem?
Absolutely. Yes.
Fascinating. Tell me about Well House, how that came about, and any of your other work that you want to talk about.
I started Well House with $33 and I was on food stamps. I'd been out of prison for a little over a year and had met Jesus, and he gave me the vision because I knew it was needed, and there was a gap in services for the ladies we serve. And if he would have let me know then that we were going to be where we are today in regards to six short years of tremendous growth, I would have ran screaming in the other direction. I'm just grateful that he's so sovereign and so wise that he just shows us one step at a time. Because for me, it was one girl. Because for 2.5 years, I didn't get any salary or anything. I was just helping. And I mean, and I don't know. I look back going, how did I make ends meet? How did I feed my family? You know, how did I do what I did? And I didn't. God did. But it was just absolutely amazing. And what we've done from $33 to 63 acres in 6 years blows me away.
I have to ask, by the way, what were you in prison for?
It was in running checks and credit cards, because that's one of the things I was required to do. Both times I've been in prison, that's what it was for.
Okay, so they have girls, or sometimes men, young boys, but mainly young girls. It's not just selling their bodies. It's not just selling drugs. It's whatever.
Yes, and through the Alabama Judicial College, I've got to train judges in courts. Employees or officials. And so a lot of now they understand and can look outside of just a prostitution charge to see what's going on. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I had a judge come up to me, and she had identified a girl in her courtroom that had just come to court with someone. And she immediately knew after a couple, you know, she sensed something was. So she started asking questions and got down to it and figured out it was a 17-year-old in her courtroom with a 30-something-year-old man that she was a missing child, number one. But she said if she had not heard me and been trained by me, she would not have identified it. She said, because I see weird stuff all the time, so it doesn't bother me, because she's, you know, a judge.
If you had some advice to give to parents, teachers, listeners, citizens, anyone, what would you tell them?
That she is a princess. She is a daughter of the king. I don't care what she's done or has been done to her. She deserves to have love and grace. She is not a prostitute. She is not a whore. She is not a drug user. She is a child of God. And it is our responsibility to love her